Wow, einen wunderschönen guten Tag.
Wow, a wonderful day.
Wir sind aus dem Team Sprecher des Chaos.
We are from the team of the speakers from CCC and want to have a look back on the year. But we first have to look forward.
Jetzt muss ich ein ganz klein bisschen ausholen.
First, I have to take a leap.
Euch wird aufgefallen sein, dass auf dieser
Veranstaltung you might have noticed that there's some people walking around want to give. They don't want to sell you Megacoin or something. We have a really great voluntary culture for this event and for our club with our members. We try to, as best as we can, the club himself is protected against political repressions. So we don't even apply for a common good application, so we can't get removed. Because we have different political opinions. Over the years, we tried to get all our members and all the members here to, when buying and paying tickets, to avoid as much personal data as we can. Despite all that, in the current time, a club has to be agile and have a bank account, which is quite difficult because you can't pay everything with a huge suitcase of cash. We tried at least, but it's quite impractical. For example, paying for 16,500 participants here on event and then give all the money additionally to make this event possible.
Wir haben jetzt in den letzten Tagen gesehen,
in the last days we saw
diese, Macht,
the power behind this,
Teile eines zentralisierten globalen
the power of a central globalized organization, which directly landed in our backyard.
Gestern gab es, schon den ersten Workshop.
Yesterday there was the first workshop on the Red Rote Hilfe.
Deutschland, der sich
Club in Germany, who tries to support different clubs, especially on demonstration and demonstration people on demonstrations, and also with banks behind it, the GLS Bank and different banks in Germany, which cancelled the accounts of those clubs. With that, they're immediately inoperable.
Es ist schwer für sie zu handeln.
That's quite difficult for them.
Und wir
and we
mit Menschen aus diesem Umkreis freundschaftlich verbunden. Wir haben
I have friendly ties to people from these organizations and try to support other clubs like Anders Aspect in Dresden, where it happened the same thing, and private persons connected to them. And we think their lists
von der US-Außenregierung
from the US Exterior Ministry, which directly acts on SWIFT, or different opportunities to act on this global banking system, which are possible, to remove their bank accounts. For example, us and our family, with FamilyLeaks, there were problems collecting money.
Müssen als Zivilgesellschaft
we as civil society have to draw here a red line, especially as we look at there. Okay.
Egal, wie wir zu kommunistischen Parteien in Deutschland stehen, wie wir zu Hate.
For example, how do we, our opposition to communistical parties, to open organizations, all the other organizations that are now on this list of the Antifa Ost?
Es kann und darf nicht sein, dass
it can't and it shouldn't be that a government with a strong right-wing alignment can decide which NGOs here in Europe are valid and not. I'm always a big friend not to say how bad everything is, but to call for who is in the GLS, in a society-based bank, who is a member, be loud, who comes from Göttingen, go to the Sparkasse and say, what is your opinion?
Der Verein drückt ausdrücklich
the club really declares its solidarity to all those
aber
other organizations.
Seid ihr alle,
but in the end, you all,
ein Bild von wer denn diese Antifa Ost ist, die dann betroffen sind.
I want to show you a picture who is then all part of this Antifa Ost.
In 2014.
This is not a recent picture, it's one from the news show quite a year back. But it draws a picture of quite the current escalation.
If
we extrapolate this picture, how anti-fascistic organizations are targeted in Germany, as the US is still acting there.
Richtig radikal antifaschistisch aufgestellt hat.
For example, here there is an organization in Germany that with their founding had a quite antifascistic alignment and could be targeted. It's a picture of the CDU. Unfortunately, we know how this organization now develops currently. For example, when remembering their anti-fascistic members, they call it not right, upright, and without grace. Now we come to the next wonderful topics that are important for our government. We all know the word digital sovereignty. That's the wonderful topic what all want to talk about, that all can make an event about and have a summit. Macron and Merz, and also then there's not so a volunteer lobbyist.
Digitale Souveränität.
And they all talked about their digital sovereignty. We can also look at how is it about our digital sovereignty. For example, when we look at Marit Kahn, who is the
International Strafgerichtshof,
the prime state defendant in Den Haag,
who in Den Haag US-amerikanischen Senatoren
this year by US senators he was threatened
persönlichen Konsequenzen
about personal consequences with for himself and his family if he pursues an international case for Netanyahu to get him into prison. But nevertheless, he did it.
Und zwar wegen Kriegsverbrechen und
because of war crime and crimes against humanity. Especially because he told his Minister of Defense to block humanitarian help in Gaza. One could apply there for a court case. For completeness, also the Minister of Defense in Israel and also the ones in Gaza where court case is going. And because of this, the US government decided on sanctions. And then there's of sanctions from of tech companies against him. And then I could imagine the sanctions like this. Oh, Microsoft Outlook doesn't work anymore. Now I can't write any emails anymore. The International Court of Justice, in the action front of this, said, okay, then we have to go away from Microsoft so we can still communicate with all the important people of us. And they moved back from this to open desk. And I think Mr. Kahn, he did it.
Und damit ist Karim Khan natürlich eigentlich der
that makes Karim Khan the most prominent international representative of Digital Independence Day.
Vorreiter, Vater des Gedanken.
Father of the thought, of the idea.
Zudem der CCC mit vielen weiteren Organisationen.
CCC, together with many other associations, called for this. The idea is quite simple. Every first Sunday of the month, you leave one of the big tech platforms, be it your podcasts moving from Spotify to RSS-based players, moving from social media platforms to Fediverse, or moving from WhatsApp to a better messenger. And at this point, we would like to use the network effect in our favor and also be proud of this. And I think we need to be more proud of what we're doing. Let's pull other people to the better places, or maybe to the alternatives that are a bit less bad. So we can be proud and brag using this hashtag every first Sunday of the coming months. And many associations like the CCC will help you and others with this and give advice. And some of it is not easy. For example, do I want to move the group, the WhatsApp group for my kindergarten, or would I rather not? And we can cooperate on this and make sure that this becomes a very sustainable project. And some of these platforms that are more free have enormous financial disadvantages when compared to the big tech ones. And here we see an information request on OpenDesk that received some federal funding. And we have to bear in mind that OpenDesk actually is a competitor of Microsoft Office, so that's quite the hard task. And we wanted to know how much OpenDesk received. And this is just one sum. It was 950,000 euros. This is just one sum, they even got more. And I think we can do it, looking at these numbers. I think we need more, because we're competing with platforms that have 20 to 30 years of advantage, huge user bases, and if the government doesn't solve this for us, let's do it ourselves. So please participate in this hashtag, move, brag, and help other people move as well, so that people can continue writing emails even if they criticize Israel for war crimes.
Ja, und weiter Ihre E-Mails schreiben soll auch natürlich unbeobachtet
and
möglich sein.
Deswegen continuing to write your emails should be unsupervised, unsurveilled, which is why we move on to chat control, a zombie that just can't be finished off. The people who were at our talk yesterday can just block their ears or speak this together with us from their memory. And what the council has now resolved to is that actually the current status, so voluntary scanning of pictures, text, URLs and videos is still allowed. There will also be some kind of age verification for app stores, and it's very unclear what this means for open source apps and platforms, which are actually kind of in favor right now with regards to digital sovereignty. And everything else will basically be the same, identical as in the proposal of the Commission. And this is a very interesting phase right now. We are at this point, as you can see on the slide, which is the trilogue phase, which is a procedure that isn't really defined, as more of a side quest in the EU legal procedure, where Commission, Parliament and the Council come together.
Da findet ihr das wieder. Und
diese Verhandlungen finden hinter statt. Considerations and this trilogue happens behind closed doors. so we don't know what they're talking about there. So we have to stay vigilant and keep exerting pressure and try to get any kind of information to finally stop chat control. We were quite successful in October, actually. As you can see here, we had to actually change the amount of signatures. In the end, there were 321,971 signatures against chat control. And this was kind of the main issue in all kinds of traditional media, printed media. We realized again that the Conservative Party, the CDU, is afraid of email, but they still received what we sent. I think we also sent some fax messages. We found some old devices that we could use, and we're going to continue with this.
Now,
let's have a look at what we need to do to really stop chat control and make this slide. First of all, we need to protect end-to-end encryption. We call for a protection, an explicit protection of end-to-end encrypted communication. It is extremely important to have trustworthy communication channels. And another thing, this kind of voluntary scanning is only really voluntary if there is a transparent categorization of risk. At the moment, you're kind of free to decide. And the worst case is that you get put into the highest risk category, because we don't really know how high the risk is, in fact, that child sexual abuse material is going to be posted on your platform, and that's why we're going to put you in this high-risk category. And we need to work on these transparent categories, that they become transparent. And the same is true for this voluntary scanning. It has to be very transparent and explicit. And
eine wirklich wirksame Regulierung von Plattformen sinnvoll, um genau
the
diese schädlichen Mechanismen
only thing that makes sense is real regulation of these platforms, and it doesn't really require any kind of mass surveillance or automatic scanning.
Und bleiben wir vielleicht noch einen kleinen
Moment bei der Altersverifikation. Let's talk a little bit about age verification. In many countries around the world, this looks like this. This is true for 50% of the states of the United States, but also in other regions, Australia, etc. We have required age verification with substantial consequences. In Germany, there have been calls for this by former judges at the constitutional courts and others. But age verification isn't just a problem for pseudonyms and anonymous communication on the web. This is also puts a lot of pressure on people, and if you look at the slide, you see how this looks on Blue Sky, and you need to use a system called KWS, which is a third-party service provider, where you get forwarded to other services to verify your identity with your ID card or your credit card. And many of these people think that, well, it's not really such a problem. We're just going to do this biometrically with UD. And maybe you've heard of this. Security researchers have actually published that this company uses a lot of tracking. That means that age verification is going to be used to make you even more easily tracked across the web.
Also, was wir an dieser Stelle auch sehen, ist, dass es
what we see at this point as well,
das ist immer eine schlechte Idee.
That it's always a bad idea. Especially in last year, we saw so many examples where people were forced to, when they want to use a service, they need to upload their ID, and then somehow the data of the ID was lost. So there is a problem as well that you can't be anonymous anymore in the web.
Exactly.
And simply, you have to say, technology is not the solution here. What kind of complex problems are here used to be solved with simple technology? The problems that are tried to be solved are algorithms of social media, like over-demand on parents, misinformation, abuse, and a lot of problems which all an age verification doesn't solve. More on the opposite, an age verification leads to a bad indicator. No, I can't get into it, but so I don't need to care about the problems anymore that are left. So in the end, you also have to ask the question, why are you excluding young people from this channel of information, or should you instead structure platforms and other places in the internet to make them better available for all and more inclusive?
Und es geht eigentlich noch viel weiter,
and
denn
it even goes on.
Was wir wirklich brauchen, wäre ja Unterstützung.
Because what we really need is the support of children and youth in the digital spaces by people with expertise. This could be people with IT knowledge, could be some with social work backgrounds, but they are drastically underfinanced. And it would take a lot of money we instead put into all these technical solutions, which are supposed to solve these technical solutions, but those who could really help them instead are totally overexhausted and underfinanced.
Plattformregulierung wirklich durchsetzen. Ich habe es gerade schon gesagt.
Platform regulation really put into force. There you also shouldn't be discouraged about what is discussed. This should be the main goal. And it shouldn't be the goal to put a broken ecosystem on top of this. This is doesn't also just affect the platforms, because there's also the question, what does it really mean for the open source ecosystem? Because we usually see the assumption open source is only used by criminals, which is a weird assumption if we see on the other side a summit where we see open source will save everything. There are the first cases, for example, in France, where such projects are just criminalized. And also in Germany, first initiatives are there, for example, in the Medienstaatsvertrag, the media contract of the states, to have such a level and introduce it. And the verification, and the question is, what does it mean then for open source? In the end, it's a huge threat for the full ecosystem. The whole topic of age verification shouldn't be under any circumstances mandatory. And in Europe, until now, there is no mandatory age verification in law, until now, and it should be the goal to not get the first case of a law, so that platforms don't get into any problems and have to centralize some mechanisms and don't need to at every and any random access and control it.
Ja, und EU-Politik ist ja immer so, man denkt,
politics, and usually when you think it couldn't be any worse, it shows it gets from mass control to even more surveillance. The Commission showed their schedule, their working program, which is going to be a blueprint for all governments in Europe. Let's look at that. They have some ideas. First of all, they want all the time data containment. Then the $1 million question is, how can you do this in a legal frame? There should be surveillance interfaces, more rights to access this data, for example, lawful access by design.
Arbeiten von Möglichkeiten gibt, Access zu verschlüsselter Kommunikation zu bekommen. Also
to get and work on getting access on encrypted data. So next year there will be the next problem going on, where we have to look at. They want to create a lot more standardization to work together with digital forensics. And Constanze's favorite topic,
KI.
AI for law enforcement. So they really want to get all these huge piles of data you all asked for and then work with them.
Also neben KI ist natürlich die alte Debatte um
AI, we also have this old debate back on data retention. It's back at the European level, but also in Germany. At CCC, we've been dealing with this for like 20 years now. I think this was one of our first things that we did with Karlsruhe, the court. And I think the actual current proposal calls for 3 months of data retention with the anonymization, and there are about 3,000 providers that will be affected by this, and with only small exceptions. I don't want to comment on those any further. What I think is important is that for the European data retention, which is less concrete than the German one, is that they are misinterpreting the decision of the European court. They think that the court actually allowed European data retention, but this isn't true. There's actually a fierce debate going on among jurists what the court case and the decision actually said. This was about a French company or a copyright agency in France. You know, all of those copyright cases that have basically evaporated since AI exists, but the agency is still working, and the case is actually quite interesting, because the decision does not say that you can just that easily save IP addresses. It says that there can be no profiling. It doesn't say anything about port numbers or additional metadata. Actually, it explicitly only talks about IP addresses, and also it doesn't say that you can just, without reason, access all of these IP addresses. There has to be a concrete suspicion against the target. But the idea that's been going around is that the European court has decided to allow IP data retention. And there is another provision that says that this has to be, all the data retention has to be restricted to the absolutely necessary data only. And there's some debate on this. There's also a question of usefulness. It's quite unclear if you can actually investigate criminal structures which also relies on technical skills of the people investigating. So the lines that we've been seeing played by the judiciary ministry in Germany isn't actually that clear and that correct, and we should not stop resisting this.
Ach, apropos Widerstand.
And speaking of resistance, data retention isn't exactly the only thing, right, Erdgeist? Well, I don't know. Maybe you can hear it. I'm from Berlin.
Früher war das dann nämlich immer so.
And back then, everything was like this. Nothing worked in Berlin, but it was quite liberal. Now, the conservatives are in power, and we are going quite fast towards a repressive surveillance state, but nothing's really happening. They have created this new ASOC Act, which contains basically everything that police departments have wished for in the past. Huge databases, AI surveillance of critical areas, mobile surveillance. Well, but this is local politics, isn't it? Anybody interested in local politics? Anybody here? Which politician is a dick? We agreed, no dick pics. Erdgeist, please. No dick pics here. I've brought one still.
Aber wie das immer so ist, wenn man erstmal
But as always, once you're in local politics, there is sort of a larger pattern. If we go back to all of politics with regard to police laws, so the ASOG Act from Berlin, which is quite a crass example actually, because they have this list, the most extensive list of police wishes essentially. But this is still interesting because this is a trend that we've also seen in other police acts. We will get to Palantir later. What the police call automated data analysis. But here we see that video surveillance is being expanded. There's always state Trojans that they still continue working on in more of like small chunks. And in most cases, they add some sort of AI behavioral pattern recognition. So this is a trend that can be seen in several of the German federal states. There's also other methods, for example, automatic recognition of car number plates. So there are all of these small pieces that can be found in all of these police acts. I'm sure that there will be some legal resistance, but we've seen this very clearly throughout 2025. And I would like to stress one more point, that in one of the, that in most of these acts, contain provisions that say that the data can from surveillance and recognition can be used for training AI. And this is actual data, actual police data, used for training AI models. This is a very huge breach of basic rights that is sort of floating around as an idea here.
Wer bei Grundrechtseingriffen nicht fehlen darf, ist natürlich
so when we talk about basic rights being infringed upon, it's always going to the conversation is always going to lead to the German Police Union, the GDP.
They
want to restrict our freedoms even further. It's always a treat to just search for GDP and their cause. You will find a lot of this stuff. There are calls for body cams and localization of phones, drone surveillance, a register for people with mental health issues. They also demand more mobile surveillance. They want a prohibition of carrying knives. And to check on that, you also need to stop and frisk people. There's all kinds of video surveillance being demanded and data retention, of course. The GDP does not really understand that social problems can't be solved by technology. and especially can be solved with surveillance. And they just keep throwing more coal on the fire of surveillance capitalism.
Traditionally,
the police practitioners are always involved in these legal procedures on all levels of German state. They will always speak at in these commissions and these parliaments. And we can see this with all three parties, like the Social Democrats, the Conservatives, and they all agree that they want to expand surveillance, and the key word here is the security package. I think this will be an issue in February. There's going to be quite a debate on Palantir, because this is our Minister of the Interior, Alexander Dobrindt of the Conservatives, and he has not said yet which provider he wants to use for his automated data analysis. So there's a lot of stuff coming up. There are quite some contradictions here in the coalition agreement. There is digital sovereignty on the one hand, but on the other hand, when we get to practical issues, asking which providers should be used for these police data, and we can see that digital sovereignty is thrown overboard quite fast. So this AI surveillance is probably going to be implemented, and most of the parties of the coalition actually support this. There will also be a modernization of the Federal Police Act, which we've been criticizing because of the state Trojan provisions. This has gone through without any resistance. Any modernization of all of these police acts sort of always include an expansion of these methods and instruments. And I think we have to resist these quite strongly in 2026.
Apropos KI-Überwachung.
Speaking of AI surveillance, there's more and more people who think that AI surveillance is going to increase people's feeling of being secure in public spaces. So there's lots of people that you can see here who think that AI surveillance are going to be great. But for the last person, we were quite surprised. Does anybody know who this is, the third person?
Na, come on.
Das ist Cem Özdemir, und auch
Cem Özdemir of the Green Party, and he said quite recently that we need more AI surveillance to bolster people's feeling of security and safety in public spaces. So it's our job to explain and show that this is bullshit. As an example of a local project from Hamburg, actually, at the Hansaplatz, Hansa Square. This is what the police who did this experiment said in their evaluation. And everything is green. There are no risks. SH means stakeholders, everything's green, every stakeholder is happy, all goals and targets have been reached, and the costs have stayed inside their boundaries. And the time schedule was also successful, and I actually put some work into evaluating this project seriously, and the reality is actually quite different, and actually everything is red. With regards to the risks, the police actually doesn't really know how AI discriminates people. The stakeholders obviously are not happy because civil society and us haven't really been participants in this project. project. By the way, there is a follow-up project that is going on right now. So if you walk around the Hansa Square next to the train station in Hamburg, you have a great opportunity to be a target of AI surveillance. And what's new is that the data being collected there can be used for AI training as well. The goals were actually not reached. Quoting them, they said that the
Sicherheitskonzept des Mannheimer Weg 2.0 bereits antrainierten Deep Learning Modelle in die Video Management Infrastruktur.
Goal should be integrated, that the data should be integrated in the existing systems of the police department. So they wanted to find out whether they could use this deep learning model in their existing surveillance infrastructure. And maybe this worked, but maybe it didn't. They also wanted to document the test results, and they failed this completely, because they did not actually collect the false positives, false negatives, and true positives, true negatives. So there is not exactly any idea on detection of criminal behaviors. So let's maybe speak about what this surveillance is supposed to do. They put these cameras up, and the AI looking at this data should detect criminal behavior and alert the police. And in the media, we learned that hitting and kicking people should be included, but the system struggled to differentiate between people hugging and people having a fight. We also read that several people gathering also was put up with an alert saying that this was suspicious criminal behavior. And there's also a lack of transparency. The police didn't really show a lot of initiatives with disclosing any of this data. And it was actually quite hard to get this evaluation through transparency laws and procedures.
I go back to the topic shortly, but I just want to say something. They are running still more video projects going on. It's not just in Mannheim. We really have to emphasize it because it's sold as a victory, but it clearly wasn't. But if they claim from police side and from the union side, we want numbers, we want an evaluation. We really want criteria. I remember, many remember from the
war erfolgreich, oder?
Am Südkreuz? From the past seasons. They were successful, right? The past events. Yeah, all streetlights are green. No. Really? What I wanted to say, we really need to demand that we are really serious with this evaluation and just continue without knowing if the projects do anything. Should I add something? Yes, please.
Also, es reicht nicht.
It's not enough to demand that the evaluation is taken seriously. I think we all should be more active to really make it also transparent. Because if you dig into it, it's surprising how much happens there and how intransparent it is all in the background. With a society that isn't even included in the process, and the most people here didn't even know that, for example, some of the Hochbahn stations were also included with AI testing. So this is also a huge appeal to you to be active and loud when our rights are taken in, and we really have to demand our rights when they want to use these AI tools to train. Do we know which use stations that are? Can we like just kick in some cameras? No, like collective hugs. But now I really come back to the state Trojan. The CCC takes like war, I think it's more than 10 years in an irregular frequency, has to give the the German Court of Justice some statement, what is our opinion on the state Trojan? And let's see.
Ehrlich gesagt,
honestly,
haben wir in dieser Stellungnahme zu dem eigentlichen
in our statement this time,
der Frage,
we didn't really to the actual state Trojan and the risk and the application. We didn't say much more to what we already said before. Not all the risks before, which just occur because of hacking systems. But here in this statement, we were asked special questions to so-called cloud services. What is the practice behind it? How can you define a cloud service? And we really tried to really describe what is this really, who uses them, which institutions, which companies, how do private people use them, which US companies are behind them, to give really a state on the full market in this statement. And also because a majority of all these cloud services are transparent and not end-to-end encrypted, so there are possibilities in the laws to really access them in a much bigger extent than it's possible a few years ago. So it's also on companies and cloud services.
Wissen wir denn, wie die Beschwerde ausgegangen ist?
Do we know how our complaint ended up? Yeah.
Das hat alles nichts geholfen.
It all didn't help. Our statement, I worked on two of them.
Trotzdem das Bundesverfassungsgericht.
Still, our court
und die angegriffenen
of constitutional court
problematischen Punkte in dem, was die
said to the two problematic points, what the police behind these two problematic points is allowed to do, can introduce, about introducing state Trojans, said, okay, it could be illegal in some cases. But still, if the Constitutional Court has some questions, we will be still available for it. What about this hidden implementing of faulty software? This is now in some police laws, police state laws. It might have some consequence in the future.
Da haben wir keine gute Übergabe gebastelt.
Yeah, somehow we didn't make a good transition there. I have there something more. Another full circle moment to the whole topic, AI. And we talk a lot about AI surveillance. And usually we would think, yeah, can toggle. You worked there a lot of years on this law and try to prohibit the worst case. Most should be now done about the EU AI Act, and most worst case should be prohibited. But unfortunately, you can see it looks like a bit differently. Also, the EU somehow is the carrier of bad news. There is this omnibus law. I want to hint on a talk yesterday by Thomas Luminger.
But
if we are on it, we also should talk about it, also shows what is happening in the EU.
Etwas, was wir uns häufig dann doch nicht
and also something
machen,
this is not that clear to us usually,
ist, also
how it really is.
Auch in der EU. Diese Realität
there is a reality in the EU, and this reality is happening right off the center. And they're taking their axe on a lot of our digital civil rights, which act on laws, even though they are not perfect, we have to be quite clear there. It's not just about putting the AI Act and not enforcing it, it's also now about like more innovation and more economic growth, which are reasons put before, which somehow are in conflict with these laws.
zu schützen im digitalen Raum.
But in reality, they are there to support and defend us in the digital spaces.
Von Tech-Konzernen.
And it's about the fight about the society against tech companies. And it's my question, demand to you. It will not be easy.
We
really have to try to avoid the worst case. And it's not a nice task. And we need a lot of motivation and your support.
So zu verkabeln, dass es
to change somehow this omnibus, that it won't be like a total downfall.
Und KI-Überwachung total
AI surveillance, total downfall. I have there a good bullet point. Yeah.
What
transition?
Yeah,
with Palantir it's a bit different, in my opinion. It's a lot more positive in the omnibus. In the omnibus, always the news only talked about cookies, and they reported, they reported what really is in there. In Palantir it's quite a lot different. It was somehow a Sommerloch thema, so in the summer break. On a really high level, they talked to our surprise. We ourselves from the CCC are interacting with Palantir quite a long time. We also advised the Constitutional Court to two cases there and with reports from experts. And really interesting to many people, it wasn't really. But it's also there a lot more important, the geopolitical reason behind it. This changed somehow the full discussion about it and changed and shifted it a bit. And additionally, I can't really help myself there, that I read a bit about Palantir as well, also about all the competition to Palantir. And they said, well, wait, what Palantir does, this we can do as well. They really, they used all their private PR departments to send something to the ministries and said, yeah, sorry, they can't do anything we can't do as well. Because it's really important to us. The debate about Palantir is really important, no questions asked. It's a question about data security, data sovereignty, or political might. Because when this company on site of Trump is changing how the rule of law is made with the police, then that's good, but the even bigger problem is behind this, that it's not just about Palantir, but in general, following on crime, on all people surveilled and registered. So we still also have to change and shift away the discussion away from Palantir. I don't think it's impossible that in the new year it will be a new debate, because I said before, Dobrindt will do something, say what he wants to do, and for example, optimize data analysis. And how? But Palantir will be used. And they are also still more problems that are fought with. And one at the CCC we looked more, where we had another law case on the Constitution. And for this, there we will talk more in detail with it, if you're interested. Where we are still working on it, and what legal reasons and risks are behind there. I'm sure it will be a topic and stay a topic in 2026. We will work on it further, and we will have to. Let's go transition to the next topic, because Palantir sells himself since the hype 2022 also AI company. Then to Germany.
And in Germany, the coalition agreement gave this another aspect as well. It says that we will establish Germany as an AI nation and that we will invest massively in infrastructure. Let's talk about how these data centers are distributed in Europe, but most of them aren't even large enough to reach into the categorization of large data center. But what's being planned now, those are, for some reason we call them giga factories now, they shall be operated in Europe. And what's so annoying to me in this debate is that in every way to look at this, at AI, it's always in the footnotes that it is very resource intensive. But the actual intensity with which the expansion of the AI data centers is stopping the expansion of renewable energy, that is not being discussed at all, typically. The mountains of electronic waste being created, all of this is always just in the footnotes and always very low effort, just saying, ah, it's just a lot of resources. But the actual size of this problem is not being talked about appropriately.
So, übrigens, also bei uns heißt es KI-Nation.
And here we call that AI nation. And in Europe, we call it the AI continent. And I really have to rant about this for a moment. Ursula von der Leyen, our EU Commission President, she really, in an official speech that was also written down, she says, in 2026, we will have an AI that will be close to human understanding. And she says that she was mistaken. She thought it would take longer. And then 72 scientists said, dear EU Commission, how did you get to this conclusion? What kind of nonsense is this? And even those, and all of those were serious scientists who are in the field, and the EU Commission answered them. And then there were some citations in there, what the AI tech bro oligarchs talked about, but it gets even better. The documents they were sent were in part AI generated.
The point that
I want to make about this is that the disinformation campaign about AI is also coming from our top-level politicians. And they send letters around that are violating the regulations. And it's important that we call bullshit when we see bullshit. And Linus, please, you need to stop me. I need to calm down again. Ah, your heart. The topic of AI is really keeping news and society busy for a while. And personally, I found it quite interesting that one of the many questions I got was, have you discussed AI at all? And, you know, I have to say, we did that in all the previous years too. And without question, this is a technology that is fascinating and can be used for many interesting things, but it is the least efficient if you're building generative models that are supposed to do everything. So maybe we will find some special cases. And I am saying that I hope that we will find them, because we have, here in Europe, we have the largest sources of data that you need for this. And in comparison to many other technologies, this is not a technology that is accessible for hackers on our small computers at home. So in order to be actually successful with these, you need really large troughs of data. And, well, a few years ago, we started shipping all of this data to the US, and for the societal development, this had really not so pretty consequences. The way that our data is used for AI, those cases are getting wider and wider. And perhaps our governments should have thought about perhaps building our own of this type of technology. But don't we have a digital minister? Yeah, but he first has to build the digital ministry now. But he already has an AI avatar now. No, that's the culture ministry. They're using all of this immediately. Yeah, they're very busy with AI. And let's go back into the year 2024. Where we presented something at 38C3. There was this beautiful news article that we reported, a review that confirms that the electronic patient record is completely safe. And that surprised me, because normally these reviews can only confirm that something is not safe. So I was wondering, how did they manage to confirm that it's secure? So I talked to Martin and Bianca, and they presented a different kind of review at 38C3. And if you look at this, it's really fascinating. This is our federal republic at its best. The Gematik, which belongs to at least 51% to our federal republic, and the other half of those are actually earning in the end. Well, I wanted to look at this review, and then you can find one made by the Fraunhofer Institute SIT in Darmstadt, and they published a 92-page review. Let's look at the methods they used. And the analysis was done with the Gematik GPT. Gematik is the German company that is told by the government to build our health digital infrastructure. And there's so much documentation about Gematik and the telehealth infrastructure that nobody wanted to read it, so they trained an AI on it, because all of this was so much paper that nobody wanted to read it. So I had to ask myself, if your security concept is too large so that even those who are supposed to review it say that they're not going to read it, TLDR, then how do you believe anyone is going to read and implement this? But even then, they still did find something. So someone requested, can I please have some access to this Gematik GPT? And they said, you know, we developed Gematik GPT on an open source basis. And then they asked, you know, where can I find this model? Where is the documentation about this? And the Fraunhofer unfortunately answered that this Gematik GPT is not public, and they are asking for our understanding. Yeah, I get that. I also wouldn't have published it, because if you look at what this thing found afterwards, it says, for example, according to security request A21716, the review of vulnerabilities can be delayed during holidays for up to 72 hours. So their solution suggested was that you need someone on duty. If there is someone who reported, if there is a CVSS score of greater than 0.5, then, or greater than 9.0, then they should fix it immediately. So I made a small excursion into when these types of security practices were invented. So I built this timeline here. I also used the help of a GPT for this. And I asked, when was the password invented? And the idea to protect a computer with a password was first mentioned at the time-sharing system at the MIT where you needed a password so that someone else couldn't gain access. And that was the idea of the password. Only people authorized can access it. And in 1982, the first smart cards using cryptography were developed by Siemens, the part that is now Infineon. And they said, look, now we have a way to securely store cryptographic keys. And that resulted in some little cards, and that was used for telephone cards, SIM cards, and also importantly on our electronic health insurance cards. And not even the variant made in 1982, but one that's even more modern. So the Federal Republic is really advanced here. So 1984 was when the idea of two-factor authentication was patented. And then in 2025, we have the electronic patient record for everyone. Without a password, without multi-factor authentication, and without using the smart card that everyone already has at home in their electronic health insurance card. So then we talked about, you know, how do you access this at home? And we thought, you know, you need the smart card. And turns out, no, they didn't do it like this. So Bianca and Martin showed this last year in the talk. And tomorrow at 17:15, Bianca will also talk a bit more about what happened since then. And also, my recommendation, just stay here tomorrow and listen to this. So what did they find? In a quick roundup, you needed the card number and the insurance number to get access to the electronic patient record. And this little reader here was available everywhere, even on eBay. So you need the insurance number and the card number. And the beautiful part is that the card number is just sequential, and the health insurance number can be obtained at a service where you give the card number and then you get the health insurance number back. So that's how they released it. In principle, that was one of the many findings from Martin and Bianca last year. And of course, they were quick to move in little steps, you know, and then they said, oh, this is very dramatic, we have to do something. And they announced that they have a fix for this. And what it is, we take the two non-secret fields, from which one is sequential and the other one can be obtained for free, essentially. We said, now you need more. So now we really make this very secure. We really understood now. We know we need something secret to secure this access. So what we're going to do now, we now need a hash value, the hash check value. And that will be calculated using the date of the insurance beginning and the street address and house number of the insured person. And now the question is, once again, what's secret about this? Well, potentially the date of when the person started to be insured. Not that much entropy, but instead of going through the effort to guess or brute force the date of beginning for the insurance, what Martin and Bianca did was they used the electronic replacement reinsurance generator, which allows you to request all of this data through a service at the Gematik. So, once again,
and
in all of this, what was not represented in the discussions was, if you just take two or three numbers and then you can get access to all of this, then that begs the question, how was this encrypted? But don't worry about it, because the electronic patient record is not just not encrypted, but it's also AI ready.
Dein Puls ist weit genug runter, dass man jetzt nochmal einen Anlauf machen kann.
Hast du gesehen, wie dieses geile Event heißt?
Did you see what this event is called? It's called the Big Bang AI Festival.
Oh Mann, ey, das ist
oh my God, Big Bang.
Ja.
Yeah.
Also wir sitzen natürlich Also wir unterhalten
ja nach wie vor diplomatische Beziehungen zu keeping touch with the BSI, the German Institute for Security in Information Technology, and with Gematik to make sure that they do sensible things. But what really worries me is that we cannot explain this with incompetence. That's just not enough. There were too many people involved that this could be reasonably explained. That people are surprised in the end about this type of security issue. And that's also a question of culture. This takes years to specify. This is being published and, you know, to produce this all of that time. What kind of culture must exist where nobody dares to say something, or those who do dare to say something cannot find anyone that is able to actually change something? And if the most critical digitalization project of our Federal Republic under Karl Lauterbach is done in a way that I have to ask myself, what about sovereignty? What about competence? This really messes with my brain, and I'm going to start crying in a moment. So let's take a quick break for a message from the office.
Kleiner Applaus für Vollkorn oder auch ein großer.
Hallo. Hello, Vollkorn. A little applause or maybe also a big one.
Moin, hallo. Ihr wisst sicherlich, dass
hello.
Office, das ist so ein kleines Zimmerchen.
You know for sure the office is a small room in Hamburg and there is a half a dozen people of the CCC, and we do something like live role-playing and playing democracy, so you're our co-players, so it's interesting how many people actually are playing with us. So we brought the distribution of the participants so far. We're there about 8,600. This is very interesting with a sharp dip around the corona pandemic. And all these participants come first to the Congress and are there going to be then members, and this broke away. We're not quite on the level of earlier times that we got so many members, but almost. And what you also see, there's a lot of people leaving. There's small dips that are again and again that yeah, so still there's phases where it's dipping down a bit. But this is what we are doing. So what are we doing when we simulate bureaucracy? So we had a look at what we mailed and emails. So we sent about 36,000 emails in 4,300 members. That's about 4.3 emails per member. And if you compare that to incoming emails, you're just sending us about 0.26 emails per member, like 2,300 people. So here's a nice distribution.
Okay, genau. Ihr seht, die drei großen habt ihr sofort erkannt, ne?
Datenänderung. So the three big factors to see: change of data.
Diese Datenänderung, das ist das, was wir auch den Datenbrief benennen.
Yeah, these data changes, what we call data ledger. Like this is your set of data. This is your payment. Your payment was received. This was this amount. So another department is the Mitgliederversammlung. Congregation, so you can enter multiple email addresses. We try to reach you on every possible channel and make sure that you are getting reached, and this is why we have more emails than members. And then, of course, we have PGP problems. And the most often problem is that their key is expiring and they have to change, and so they just drop it and do it unencrypted. And every time we try to send you a mail, then we send you another letter, another email that your PGP isn't working anymore. What also is interesting is applications for end membership entries and leaving.
Haben es immer noch nicht geschafft,
but still,
den Verwendungszweck in der Überweisung für eine
almost
in ihren Daueraufträgen
500 people can't set
E-Mail mit
payment
zu lauten hat.
Und jedes reason, Mal, like what is the correct description for your payment, sagen, that we can link your payment to your account. So to these 468 people, please review your payment tag, so else we have to do that by hand. Well, payment dues is probably self-explanatory, and the rest is more or less typical questions that we also answer, of course, and one that is quite regular was like, hey, we didn't receive your Datenschleuder, your magazine. And this is because we didn't manage to publish an issue this year. So one point is we have published the Hack Bible this year, and also we had technical restructuring, and we didn't really manage to get back into the mode of operation after the Hacking Bible. We do have a new Datenschleuder for the beginning of next year. If it's not quick enough to know you, then you can come to the membership desk and look into old issues of the Datenschleuder or take a Hacker Bible with you. That's for this topics. If you want to know what this money is used for that you paid for, that's mentioned in the statistics, then I hand back to Constanze again.
Ja, wir haben uns dieses Jahr entschlossen.
Well, this year we decided to support Epicenter Works from Austria with a donation of 15,000 euros for their 15th anniversary.
Wir arbeiten schon sehr lange.
We like and arbeit, working with Epicenter Works and have a long relationship. We have our roots in work against the data collection, but it's also important beyond the borders of Austria and researching independent projects and doing statements. They have established themselves at the European level as an early warning system, and they're even more internationally engaged by investigating the Cybercrime Convention and are the only organization that is regularly reporting on that. We appreciate their work very much and looking forward to collaborating with Epicenter Works in the future.
Dann beschäftigen wir uns das Jahr
then we looked at helping others with their computers, a pretty case that wasn't very high level technically, but and it wasn't that many people who were impacted. There was issue in Juris, like a database from the BGH, and you could have come up to some mischief by whenever a ruling is, or shortly before a ruling, you could issue your own ruling to manipulate stakes and we have reported this issue twice, so it was open, closed again, then we saw that by accident, and then we have opened it again, and so we hope this is finally resolved.
Dann helfen wir nicht nur anderen mit ihren
Computern. Then we don't help only others with their computers, but also third parties that help people with their trains. And there's this company called MEWAG who are manipulating their trains with a special kind of geo-blocking that led to their trains only being able to repair in their very own service shops. And a few people reported this last Congress very in detail, and so they were sued by civil law and persecuted them. They reported what the state of affairs is, and we collected for the legal fees, and they invested a lot of own time and money, and we got 529 donations with 21,000 euros. So a big thank you for the community. This was very interesting. We have just mentioned this a little bit, and after just 10 days, the money was there. So much thanks for the solidarity. And this is not yet over. There's no update yet what the ruling or the judgment is, and we hope that the prosecution is going to be stopped eventually, and we hope that the people responsible at MEWAG don't get away with this. The civil processes are still running, and the next one is going at the beginning of 26. And there's a very interesting attempt by a Polish representative, Maciejek, who tried to get this into a Polish infrastructure commission, and the rest of the commission, Jurosław Sosson, and discarded the investigation because we couldn't attack Polish organization like this. So much thank you for these three that invested so much time and money and had so many sleepless nights.
As every year, if we look back, we have to admit that we can't clean up every little nook and cranny. The topics that we are planning to work on more intensely next year are on the slides right now. We are in background talks in various forums where we just can't report anything yet, where we also haven't yet gained the impression that we can really change a lot there. So I just want to mention this in case someone here is someone among us that can support us with one of these topics, then please get in touch with us. And yeah, depending on our availability.
Aber
vielleicht, but maybe you need to add that we are working on some of these topics by proxy. We haven't talked about EU politics much yet, but lots of these topics are being worked on by Adrian. We are part of a lot of working groups, and by now we have as many working groups on EU level as the entire Finger group, so that makes it difficult to be there everywhere in detail. So if we can be sure about one thing, then that's this. The slide says the police must not be a law-free space.
Dann ein anderes
then another less pretty topic. We help the police because we think that also the police must not be a law-free space. You might have heard of PimEye, a search engine. They search for faces, they save the biometric data in databases, and I could just take a picture of you and then find pictures of you on the internet that might identify you with your name. This company was in Poland, and when they heard that the GDPR exists, they suddenly founded themselves in the Seychelles. The founders are probably in Dubai now, and unfortunately, there is not enough being done about PimEyes, and as part of some investigative research, I found these small requests made about the usage of PimEyes, and it's clearly illegal to use this, especially if it's used by law enforcement. There's just no basis for it in law, and in Hess, the law enforcement just didn't care. We don't know in which how much they used it, but and to be extra safe, they did not ask the Hessian data protection officer. And what I really think is quite sad is that this extreme example did not find its way into the yearly report of the Hessian data protection officer, because if the police is able to use such a tool for 1 to 2 years without the data protection officer noticing this, then they're just not able to fulfill their overseeing duties. And this case is already some time ago, so perhaps we can help the police there somewhere. But yeah, the button is broken. There's another case where we had to help the police because we're now suing the Federal Criminal Agency to make sure that they stick to the laws. You might have heard of INPOL, which is not just a database with millions of faces, but also with, it's also filled with people with frontal and side profile photos of everyone who was just where the police attempted to identify them, whether or not they were actually convicted of anything. And this really cannot be in the interest of anyone to give this data to Fraunhofer to test which of the facial recognition software is available in the market is the best to recognize people based on these photos. So together with someone, we are now suing the Federal Criminal Agency. And of course, they initially tried to keep the secret. There were freedom of information requests. There were data protection officers that were drawn into this, and we reported this to them, but nothing happened. So now the only choice we have left is to sue them.
Dann
der Chaos Computer Club hat sich wirklich
the Chaos Computer Club set a goal to work on debanking in the last Members Assembly in April, we worked on the document stating what is incompatible with us that was first made about 20 years ago. We did this as a reaction of an attack of Nazis to the Nature Friends House. And then we really had to draw a sharp line against ideologies that we think are incompatible with a membership in the Chaos Computer Club. And back then, 20 years ago, it was important to us, and therefore we wanted it to just quickly have one. So the first version we had was a bit rough, which, for example, named some associations which don't even exist anymore. So we reacted to the initiative of a few members and updated this clause of incompatibility, and actually it was a unified vote by everyone who was there. The new version of this is on our website, but everyone who came in to the Congress Center probably also read the most two important sentences. And this is now for our association a mandatory declaration that we wish that no one who is active in associations or parties which violate our fundamental principles, that if they're based on chauvinism or nationalism, so you can probably imagine which parties we mean, but we decided to not explicitly name them, and we are just a stable anti-fascist organization. So we hope to receive some letters from our bank in the near future.
Das war das jetzt die Tschüss-Slide. Vielen Dank.
This is the goodbye slide. Thank you very much.